You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. And who are you? I bet you're a paradigm shifter or you wouldn't even be listening to this show. Who are paradigm shifters? To me, from my perspective, they're people that are really helping with the great shifts going on in the collective of our planet at this time in history, headed toward 2012. And my paradigm shifter today is a very, very exciting woman named Judy Cole. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Thank you.
And Judy is a, I don't know, you call yourself a lay researcher, but you cover such a broad spectrum of information from radionics, from sound healing to nutrition, what we were talking about, numerology and names and all of that, but it's...
And don't forget homeopathy and essential oils and energy work and geomancy.
Yeah, you also, and geomancy, okay. I don't think we actually talked about that, but we didn't run out of things to say so far, so. This woman is like an encyclopedia, only she's got a lot more heart than most encyclopedias. So, I remember when we were talking yesterday, you spoke of your experience, with sound, where do you want to start with this? Because it's like the sound healing with the big, I think it was the Jeffrey Thompson formation that you were in, and the sound healing exploration that you did. Do you remember?
No, I was the. I didn't meet. I just met Jeffrey Thompson about a year ago.
Okay.
But this actually started long before I met Mr. Thompson.
And the reason for people at home, we were talking about a geometric form around music, and I jumped to his style. So that's the only connection there, really.
In 1993 and 1994, I had a very unusual experience. We had two glyphs that appeared in our backyard. And a glyph is similar to a crop circle.
Uh-huh.
But it's in a different medium than a crop. In our case, the first one was in sand, and the second one was in snow, and both of them occurred in the same place in the yard.
Hmm.
And I heard the tones. There was more than one tone. I heard the tones, actually, as the glyphs were being made.
Hmm. Was it daylight?
No, it was dark. What we did is we did something by accident. Of course, I'm beginning to wonder if there are ever really any accidents. You know, we do things, but I think we do them with a knowledge that maybe we aren't consciously aware of.
Mm-hmm.
The first glyph was in sand, and the second glyph was in snow.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were very similar to a psionic design that Dr. Mohsen Harmanish has drawn out. And they had a connecting ring that led from petal point to petal point. I was actually in the bed sleeping, and I literally felt the magnetic field, and I heard the tones as the glyphs were being created.
Oh, my gosh.
And it took me until 2006 to learn the sonic ratio of the frequencies that created these glyphs.
Sonic ratio, you mean that like the way the tone would actually impact the material world?
Yes. And both of these were a 5-to-1, what's called a rotary countercurrent. And so that's the type of waveform that they were, and they looked like the flower of life with an extra loop joining them together.
Wow. Pretty powerful statement of reality.
I still don't know exactly who made those, but I know that what we had done is we had created a diamagnetic field surrounding a paramagnetic field that was surrounding a dielectric field in our organic backyard.
Wow.
And if people will read the books of Philip Callahan, you can get those through Acres USA.
Mm-hmm.
He has probably the best information on what is a paramagnetic field, how does this impact a farm, how does it impact an animal, how does rock, material, brick, how does this work? And what had happened to us is we had been gifted an old blackboard slate, which is paramagnetic, and we wanted to lay a 20 by 30 foot terrace with organic gardens surrounding the terrace.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted a very high contrast, chiaroscuro effect between the sand base and the gray-black slate. So we chose a sand mixture that had a high quartz and silica content. After we relocated all the sod, we had a trucking company bring us two big dump trucks of sand, which the neighborhood children wanted piled up real high so they could sled down it. Well, they know, you know. they just know that we needed a pyramid in our backyard. And in the center of the backyard, which was mostly without sod, was this huge little mountain pyramid of the sand. So, meanwhile, we had gathered this slate, and the slate was literally knocking our garage down the hill. Our city code required that the slate be stored upright until it was put into its permanent place. Now, this is a really illogical way to store slate, because you'll make it peel.
Mm-hmm.
But we were dealing with a governmental authority and a law that still needs to be changed. So we're not going to, we won't utilize your venue to comment about governmental logic as the results speak for themselves.
It's the old paradigm talking.
It's the old paradigm talking, and we're talking new paradigms here.
Right.
So to prepare the garage for what became a necessary retaining wall, the paramagnetic slate had to be moved. And so my partner spread the weight of this paramagnetic slate all around the yard. So he put one piece up against a tree and another piece up against a fence post and another one against concrete blocks and another one against another tree. And so he had this circle of this paramagnetic slate all the way around, but inside where the trees were. And trees are, they're wood, they're diamagnetic. So, and the sand is dielectric. And so when this was eventually flattened out to be prepared for compaction and to put the paramagnetic slate on top of it, we had it flattened out, but the paramagnetic slate and the diamagnetic trees were still surrounding it while the slate was awaiting its ultimate placement in the yard. And the first glyph was in sand, and the second glyph was in snow, and they were both made around 3 o'clock in the morning.
Hmm.
And I had these unique dogs that once they met you, they would not bark at you.
Oh, really?
Once you were accepted into the household, this mother and daughter dog, the daughter dog was blind, and once you were invited into the house, they would never again bark at you, even if you came and beat on the door.
Hmm.
They wouldn't bark at you. And I also had a duck that had imprinted also to the mother dog, and if the dog barked, she would quack. The duck didn't quack, and the dogs didn't bark when these glyphs were made.
Interesting. So it was a familiar person.
So to me, it was somebody who was at least familiar to the duck and the dogs. And the moon was really bright each time. I can't tell you whether or not it was a full moon, but knowing what I know about the tides and the moon and water, I really and truly probably believe that the moon was full. I do remember noticing that it was exceptionally bright out. It was almost like daylight when I went outside.
Hmm. Were they both done on the same night?
No. One was done in July, and the other one was done in January.
Hmm.
July of 93 and January of 94.
Hmm.
And so what happened was the glyphs actually began my personal healing journey away from what had been a predominantly allopathic standard medical route to a very circuitous alternative medical route.
Oh, does that mean you were in the medical field?
No. I had been in an accident, and I'm a pretty unusual person. I've actually had 13 general anesthesias in my lifetime, which most people can't really handle that much. I was actually technically dead, and my friends joke that the Lord wouldn't have me and the devil wouldn't take me, so I got to come back.
Well, you had to have your near-death experiences, didn't you?
Yeah, two of them. I was actually electrocuted when I was think I was 18 or 19. I'd have to go back and get a calendar out. And then this other accident was in 1991.
Hmm.
But this circuitous alternative route is what has led me into studying all of these different modalities, and it consistently has led me back to the garden and back to the sonic science as combination of the keys to unlock the potential of the gift of healing. And the gift of healing always requires that you have to accept the gift of healing, so that requires the activation of faith.
Hmm. Are the glyphs anywhere around them? I mean, of course, in the snow, it would have to melt, right?
No, the snow melted. It was kind of strange. The first time I was furious because I thought that my friends had played a hoax on me. I mean, obviously, it was somebody that I knew from my limited way of thinking, because my dogs didn't bark and the ducks didn't quack. So it was obviously someone that was considered to be okay to be in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And none of my friends would admit to having placed the glyph back there. And I was really irritated, because at that time my partner lived in Connecticut and just periodically came out to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really scared me, because here someone was in my backyard making a pattern in sand while I was asleep.
Now tell me this, Judy, were you by this time aware of healing energies, or was this all like breaking things open for you? Were you aware of frequencies, that you'd studied radionics or geomancy or anything?
None of that, but I'll tell you what I had studied up until that time. My daughter has always claimed that I never got over being a hippie.
How could you recover from that?
You know, I was very into organic essential oils, but I didn't study them from energy properties. I just liked the scent.
Mm.
And I was extremely into astrology. I wouldn't let her go out on a date unless I had done her date's astrology.
Good for you. Did it work?
It worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. I told her which relationships weren't going to work out, and I was right. You know, mothers have to be right about something, you know.
Right, yeah, even if they don't admit it.
But I was very into organic gardening. I was very much into the oils, and I was very much into astrology. But I did not have any concept or notion about using these things as energy for healing.
Oh, okay.
They were just something for information and pleasure.
So when did that change?
It actually changed after the glyph.
Wow.
It actually changed after the glyph.
But did it just make you ask a lot of questions, or did you feel differently?
I felt differently.
Oh.
I felt differently. The first one, my friends, you know, they laughed and they said, "Hey, that's pretty cute, Judy. Did you do that with a board? How could you have done that with a board? You had both hands in cast." I mean, both hands were in cast.
Oh, wow.
So there was no way I could have made it, and so I was very threatened by the first one. And so the second one was in snow. Well, I had to get a shovel out of the garage and dig a path back to it. I knew nobody broke into the yard.
Hmm.
And I did something that I didn't know at the time why I did it. It was just one of those things that felt right.
Mm-hmm.
And when I entered into the glyph, I was digging my way back to it, and my hands were still healing from the surgery, so they weren't really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up laying the shovel down against a tree stump and literally jumping in the snow. The snow was a very odd snow for our area. I live in northeastern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And the snow was really kind of what I would call more like a lake effect snow.
Mm-hmm.
It was light and fluffy, but it was mid-thigh high.
Oh, wow. So
very, very deep. We don't usually get snow that is that deep.
Hmm.
And so I ended up literally jumping through the snow out into this area. It was just like somebody took a blowtorch and melted the center.
Wow.
Out of the snow, but it wasn't the center. It was the same pattern in the same place.
And it was as deep as, like, hip high?
It was mid-thigh high.
Wow.
And I'm not tall. I'm about 5'2½" if I'm stretched real good.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gives you an idea of the height that it was. And it was just a path just wide enough for me to walk. And the sides of, I had a long corduroy bathrobe at the time, and the sides of my corduroy bathrobe would kind of squish against the sides of it.
Hmm.
At the path.
Hmm.
And, I walked it 3 times clockwise. It would just feed into itself. You know how the flower of life, if you have that extra loop, will just feed into itself?
Right.
Actually, it'll do it without the loop. This one had the extra, it was like the 6 petals, but then it had from point to point, it had another line.
Wow.
Actually, a semicircle from point to point. And so you can walk it kind of in this circuitous route, just like my healing journey, you know. You could walk it in this route, you know, and just feed into itself. You didn't have to go through, cut through the snow at all, because the cut was already there. And after I walked it about 3 times that way, that didn't feel right. And so I turned around and walked counterclockwise until the sun came up. And when I realized the sun was coming up, and it was just kind of almost like a meditative trance-like walk.
Hmm.
Just like mindlessly following a path without caring where you're going to end up. You know, just walking it over and over and over. And I now know what I did was, and I have Cherokee blood in me, so I probably did it naturally, but I didn't know this consciously at the time.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was basically very similar to the Native American tradition of going into the circle for healing.
Mm.
You go in, you walk clockwise to your position. You enter through the east door, you walk clockwise to your position, and then you turn and you walk counterclockwise to the place where you became ill. You do your healing work, and then you come back clockwise and exit back out the east door. So I didn't know that consciously at the time, but that's exactly what I did.
Hmm.
It was one of those innate knowing things. So as the sun's coming up, I'm thinking, oh, man, my neighbors already think I'm pretty strange. You know, if they see me out here walking around in circles in my bathrobe, they're going to call the paddy wagon and have me locked up. So I kind of looked around to see where I had jumped in.
Mm-hmm.
Because the snow was really, really deep. And I thought, isn't this odd? I'm not cold. I moved up here from Texas, and I'm not cold. I've been cold since I got here. And I'm not cold. And there's all this snow out here, and all I had on was a pair of sweats with a bathrobe, this lightweight corduroy bathrobe over the top of it, and I had on cotton slippers, and my cotton slippers were sopping wet. And the whole bottom of the robe where it had rubbed against the sides of the path were wet. But I wasn't cold.
What, were you conscious of an energy in there, like an updraft or?
No, like I said, I was just kind of walking it just very, no thought, just walking it just as if I was pulled through there, almost like a magnetic pull.
Mm-hmm.
And just walking it just in the pattern.
Hmm.
Just walking the circles in the pattern. And so I thought, well, I've got to get back out of here, you know, so they don't, you know, think I've flipped my lid and I'm out here walking around in circles. And so I looked to see where I had entered, and it was closer to turn back and go clockwise and go to the place where I had entered and then jump back out in the same spot. And when I landed on the part that I had shoveled, you know, because I'm trying to jump through this thigh-high snow, which is very hard to jump in.
Right.
And when I landed on the path, it was kind of like it was the first really clear thought that hit me. And the thought was, the medical route really doesn't work like it's supposed to. I have to take back my power. We all have to take back our power.
That is true.
That it was just one of those really profound things to me that we have an innate knowing how to heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get back to honoring and valuing and listening to ourselves and doing what we know we need to do to facilitate our own healing journey. Because from birth to the grave is a healing journey. So and over the next, you know, like 4 or 5 days as the snow melted, I would stand out on the patio and drink my coffee, and the ducks were going through the path, and the birds were there, and the squirrels and the dogs, and I thought, isn't that interesting? You know, I wonder how that was made. Mm-hmm. And after it melted, I didn't think another thing about it until 1999.
And this is in 94, right?
This is in 94. So for 5 years, I didn't have another thought about it. It wasn't there. I just didn't think about it.
It hadn't changed you in the sense of healing,
right,
for example.
I went in and I felt guided to put in a medicine wheel organic tea garden.
Okay.
Back there off of one side of where the slate went down.
How big is your yard?
That yard, I don't live in that house anymore. I still own it. It's a rental property. But that yard is 60 feet wide by 187 feet deep. And then it has about a 16-foot wide ditch at the back of it that runs between the properties. So it has a really deep backyard as far as a standard lot. It's bigger than a standard lot. Your standard lots are typically, in our area, they're typically 50 by 100 to 150
right.
of standard-sized lots. So it has quite a deep backyard, and it's really an interesting area. It has something that has to do with the oaks. You know, our trees are the antennas to the interdimensional and to the spirit world.
Right.
And that whole area has these huge, very tall oak trees.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Did you make your tea garden?
I made the tea garden, mm-hmm. and it's still there today, and I go harvest it a couple of times a year. And I'm planning on going back and actually doing some very extensive work in that garden. I'm going to be doing a lot more heirloom seeds.
What was the product in the garden? Given the glyphs and so on, both glyphs, what was it like growing things there? Were they really amazing?
Well, it was kind of interesting. My next door neighbor and I, every winter, we would get together and we would plant our garden. And I had clay soil, and he had amended his soil with a lot of compost.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, his garden would bear produce, which he would share with us. And every year, my garden would bear a produce.
Every year, your garden didn't grow produce?
Right, it was bare of produce. But after the glyph appeared, it was actually the first year I had started trying to make compost, but I was trying to compost oak weed.
Hmm.
And oak leaves take about 5 years to break down. Well, I had talked Tom, and I was gifted. I get gifted rather strange things. I was gifted a truckload of horse manure. So
that could be a really good gift. It just sounds funny, huh?
Well, it was a wonderful gift because it was exactly what I needed to finish breaking down those oak leaves.
Hmm.
And so at the same time that this glyph appeared, I had this huge compost bin, and the compost was ready then in the spring. So in the spring, all that wonderful compost went out on my clay soil. And it was kind of interesting. The thing that grew more than anything else was Queen Anne's lace. So the entire backyard was almost covered with Queen Anne's lace. And Queen Anne's lace is a flower in essence is to help you with spiritual awakening.
Oh my, wonderful.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, something happened to the house where I live right now.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I did not get any compost spread at all. And last year in my garden here, I had this huge proliferation of Queen Anne's lace.
Hmm.
That appeared all over my gardens here. So I'm going to be curious to see what's going to happen with the gardens here. I keep checking to see if there's more glyphs, but I haven't had a glyph yet.
You want that. So how did you go into geomancy? Is that, geomancy is following the lines of energy on the planet or where the energy spots are or where the energy vortices are. Is that right?
Right. And you also, with geomancy, what you're doing is you're aligning basically the heavens and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing energetic work to align that. And that's really where our Ringing of the Rivers project was born.
Okay.
Which also goes back to that same garden. We had had a neighborhood cleanup over there,
mm-hmm.
and a neighbor's pit bull jumped the fence and attacked my little 10-pound dog.
Oh, my.
And we thought my 10-pound dog was dead because he was unconscious. And three adults and five children, we couldn't get the pit bull to stop shaking my little 10-pound dog.
Mm.
And one of the children, Jeremy, brought out a long piece of granite. Now, this was in the ditch that was down at the back of the property, so it was below right where the glyph had appeared.
Mm-hmm.
But the sand, we had gotten way too much sand for what we needed, so over time that sand had just kind of washed down the hill into the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm standing on this sand that has the high silica quartz content. And Jeremy comes out and starts poking the pit bull with this big, long, heavy piece of granite. It was long and narrow. It was about an inch and a half thick, about 5 inches wide, and I would say probably about 30 inches long.
Wow, and that's pretty big for a kid.
I can't even lift it, but you know, when you're scared, the adrenaline is just pumping. You can do anything when you've got that much adrenaline.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And he was poking the pit bull with it, and I said, give that to me. And I ripped it away from him, and I took it right up over my crown chakra two times and hit that pit bull in the middle of the back with everything I had, with this piece, huge piece of granite, and nothing happened. And so I took it up over my front crown chakra again and hit the pit bull on top of the head twice. Did that two times. So four times this has gone up over my front crown chakra. When I hit the pit bull the second time on top of the head, Wrigley started screaming. Our little white dog started screaming. Then everybody really got frantic because then we knew Wrigley was still alive. I mean, we were already frantic to begin with. And the children's ages that were helping us, the youngest child was 5.
Oh, my.
And the oldest child was, I think, 11 or 12. So, I mean, we really had a really hysterical situation going on back there. And so I took that piece of granite, and I was literally hitting that pit bull with everything I had. I took it back up over my back crown chakra. And when I did, it felt like I shot out of my body, back in time, several miles away.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm literally standing on a street, back in time, holding this piece of granite over my head, wondering where in the world am I, and I'm looking down at our little red dog named Tucker, who, it was his graduation day of training, the Monday after September 11th, 2001. It was the Monday right after that, and we were doing practice with him and being off-leash.
Mm-hmm.
It was his graduation day from class, and he broke training. He saw a Pomeranian across the street, and he ran right in front of this huge car.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't a drop of blood. He didn't scream. He was immediately unconscious. He died in Tom's arms as we pulled into the vet's office.
Oh.
But, you know, I'm back in time, and I'm looking at Tucker's little still body on Washington Boulevard. And just a second before, I had been over on Lansdowne Drive. I'm like, where am I? And the voice that I call my teddy bear voice, I thought my teddy bear was talking to me when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I call this voice my teddy bear voice. It's been with me most of my life. And it usually comes through the strongest when there's an emergency situation. And my teddy bear voice says, you can't change what happened to Tucker, who was the little dog that got hit by the car. You can stop this. And then it was like this whoosh, whoosh feeling, like being lifted and set back down again.
Mm-hmm.
So So I had this double whoosh whoosh, and I'm standing there just kind of waving in the air, holding this huge piece of granite over my head, thinking, where in the world am I? My teddy bear voice is screaming, you can stop this, you can stop this, you can stop this. And I'm like, I'll be bit. And my teddy bear voice said, you'll be safe. And I threw the piece of granite down on the ground, dove in, wrapped my arms to protect my dog's spine, and stuck my head up under the pit bull's jaw.
Wow.
Long story short, after we ate fence on each side, it's amazing how strong the dogs are when they're in attack mode.
Yep.
I remember my having like a full body slam against each side of the fencing on this 16-foot wide ditch. I remember counting four times on each side of the ditch. And in the meantime, other men who were helping with the neighborhood cleanup came running to the back because they heard everybody screaming. And one man had a belt on, and he got that belt off and had that around, and was able to get that around the pit bull's neck. But he was being dragged back and forth on the from the ditch, too. Now, I weighed about 102 pounds at the time, and my dog weighed 10 pounds, so that was 112 pounds, and this man, I'd say he was about 165, 170 pounds, and we're just literally being drugged all over the place.
Wow.
You know, and I don't know what happened, but for some reason, it may have been because the man was choking the pit bull, or it may have been because the pit bull realized that he had a human's head in his mouth. But for some reason, he opened his jaw and dropped my head and Wrigley's head out.
Excellent. So you're still alive.
And Wrigley literally shot out of my arms and ran up on top of Tom, literally just up to his shoulders. And the man was able to restrain the dog. It turns out the dog was not human aggressive. He was only animal aggressive.
Hmm. Anyway, you know what? I'm going to have to interrupt you because we only have a half hour left. We only have 20 minutes left, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about here.
We've got a lot to cover. Well, long story short, we then spent the next 3 weeks working with the children to explain to them why they don't do that.
Okay.
and Wrigley survived. He was paralyzed, but we took him to our chiropractors, and they put his spine back into place.
Oh, thank you. Talking about chiropractors and so on and healing, I want you to talk a bit about SON, amino acids, and our power. And let's see, there's so many things. Sound, how sound has had an impact. We don't have time for a long story. You can have to thumbnail it.
Okay.
Because we'll run out of time. And I guess those are really important. I was going to ask you if you think that we've been enslaved by our society in terms of the nutrition and how we've been fed, you know, what media does to our thinking, what the food supply is like and so on. You're into radionics. I'm going like, do you think energies have really limited us, or do you think that's just all paranoia on the part of many people?
No, I don't think it's paranoia. This is one thing, you know, people cannot discount how you feel.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you can take and look at the evidence that's out there. You can look at the growing number of addictions
mm-hmm.
that we have in America. Addictions are a starvation syndrome.
Okay.
And
I've always thought that those humongous, really fat people are often people who are starving, actually.
They are starving, and they're starving in a lot of different ways. But let me give you an example, and if people will go in on the internet, if they have access to the internet, if they go in and look up counselormagazine.com,
okay.
If they go in and search the archive and choose January, February of 2001, if they will click on nutritional gene therapy, Nutritional gene therapy. So it's Counselor Magazine. Go into the archive. Pick January, February 2001 for that publication. And then click on Nutritional Gene Therapy. And there's a chart that was originally published in in nutritional gene therapy, natural healing and recovery, that was originally made by Bloom, Ross, Rubin, Gaslou, and Miller. And this is one of the best charts that I have ever found that shows the connection between amino acids, B vitamins, manganese, brain chemicals, the substance that you choose to abuse, what the amino acid deficiency symptoms are, and what is the expected behavior change once you supply the nutritional ingredient.
Mm. That's really exciting. So what you're saying is that a lot of the addictions come from, and I'm throwing in ADD and ADHD and PTSD and so on, come from deficiencies.
Yes, so the post-traumatic stress disorder, that is one of the published medical studies of Sun Formula.
Hmm.
And Sun Formula, my partner, is one of 11 USA distributors in the United States.
Sun is S-O-N?
S-O-N, and Sun Formula is marketed under two names. It's marketed under the name MAP, M-A-P, for Master Amino Acid Pattern.
Okay.
Primarily to athletes is who usually purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's marketed to the medical professionals through the physician's desk reference as Sun Formula.
Hmm.
There are 44 published medical studies on this product, one of which is for post-traumatic stress disorder. When you have a situation of attention deficit disorder, according to this chart, the substances that you will be drawn to abuse will be caffeine, speed, cocaine, marijuana, aspartame, chocolate, alcohol, tobacco, sweets, and starches. The brain chemical that is not in balance is norepinephrine and dopamine. And the supplemental ingredients that are missing are the amino acids, tyrosine, and phenylalanine.
Is that the same for PTSD?
PTSD, you've got, I have, because of my training in homeopathy,
mm-hmm.
I believe that in PTSD, that you need to not only supply the nutrition, you also need to antidote the shock and trauma homeopathically.
Okay.
That's based upon my personal training and belief system. It's not based upon a medical study. Sun Formula actually does have a published medical study for post-traumatic stress disorder. We have tried to get Sun Formula into our veterans hospitals. Once upon a time, if you had three different doctors that wanted to prescribe the same product, you could get that added to that local VA hospital formulary. We have tried that in two different veterans hospitals and were told that you could no longer do that. You had to go through the main formulary.
Hmm.
But the problem is that Sun Formula is actually nutrition. It is not a drug. It is listed as nutrition in the physician's desk reference because that's what it is.
Do you have any case studies where somebody with PTSD, for example, was shifted and helped by some of this?
Yes.
Whether
yes.
it's Sun Formula or a combination of homeopathy and nutrition. And
you can go in, if you go in and it's kind of interesting that I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name who founded AA.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either, but I, yeah.
Bill was his first name. But mm-hmm. 15 years after AA was founded, he discovered the connection between the cravings, amino acids, and B vitamins.
Hmm.
And he tried to get them to change their program, and they wouldn't do it.
Wow, really?
Yes, and this is what I've been told, but this is something that's been discussed local drug and alcohol groups that are people who work with people who are in recovery,
mm-hmm.
That work with people who are addictive, people who are in the prison system, and who also work to prevent addictive. And that's one of the things that we've had quite a few discussions about. It's really sad to me that the nutrition is not funded in recovery. In the state of Indiana right now, 1% of our population, I did a grant application several years ago. And 1% of our population is in prison.
Wow.
86% of those who are in prison are there because of drug or alcohol abuse.
Oh my gosh.
Now this is really a very critical thing to consider. Now if you think about it, they've been getting their meals when they're in prison. When they're released, quite often they don't have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often they go to live in some sort of a shelter. The shelters don't have enough funding to feed the people.
But wait a sec, Judy, because I would say, from what I know about nutrition, that eating in the jail 3 squares a day is going to leave them with deficiencies anyway.
Well, right? I would agree with you. I did a prison ministry with 2 people several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was totally, and it was interesting, 2 of them were in the same jail. The other gentleman, when he was a classic borderline personality disorder. And what happened is whenever he had, death of a family member, he would fall off the wagon.
Mm.
And when he had lost about 75 pounds, he would voluntarily check himself into rehab. And this was a pattern that had occurred with this particular gentleman since he had been like 11 years old.
Hmm.
But he wasn't diagnosed as that. You know, I'm not a doctor. He was not diagnosed as that originally. But that was what all the symptomology you could take and you could read his records and all of it pointed to that. And the other person was a woman.
Let me ask you this. Can you use, and I'm changing the subject a bit because I'm so conscious of the fact we're almost out of time, but can you use radionics, for example, in addiction? So, like, if we used amino acids and really shifted this, even the borderline fellow, and applied radionics, what would happen? Like, are there studies, A, and B, the other thing that we haven't addressed in this is that a lot of the nutritional deficiencies have to do with agribusiness, don't they? They have to do with the economic controls around how food is created and where it's going, right?
Absolutely. Our farming practices really do hamper our ability to get our amino acids from our food.
Mm.
When you hybridize a plant,
mm-hmm.
you're messing, now this is my theory, this is totally my theory, but I have this is a theory that I have discussed with many people who are chemistry people, who have studied this radionically, people who have studied it from a nutrition standpoint, nutritionists, a few medical doctors. There have been quite a few of us who have looked at this, and we're all seeing the same pattern. So we would love for someone out there in research that's doing chemical research, is doing medical research to actually look into this.
Well, that's the problem is unless there's a lot of funding for that, nobody does it, right?
Right.
You just said something also which kind of answered another question I asked you, which is you're using radionics to see what the impact is on this hybridization, right? You kind of implied that in the way you were talking.
When you hybridize a plant, let me kind of back up. When you're hybridizing a plant, you're messing with the natural sexual selection of the plant.
Right.
So what you're doing is you are putting a stress factor into that plant.
Right.
Now, a friend of mine who is a chemist and another friend of mine who has been an organic farmer at this point for probably 20 or 25 years. We were talking about what happens when you hybridize the plant. And so we were talking specifically about the corn plant.
And that's genetically engineered. Is that the same as hybridized?
I'm talking hybridized. Genetically engineered is different.
Okay.
When you genetically engineer a plant, the articles and the research that I've been reading is that you're locking up a genetically engineered plant will actually lock up certain protein receptors in the body. Another farming practice is pasteurization. When you pasteurize something, you are removing certain digestive enzymes which help you to digest proteins, which is where you get your amino acids, and that's how you hook up your neurotransmitters. That's why this chart is so full of information. I mean, it's a one-page chart, and it is just packed with information. You can take and look at what you crave, because an addictive substance is not necessarily an illegal drug or alcohol. It can also be prescription medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It can be chocolate. It can be sweet. It can be sugar. Starch.
Mm-hmm.
It can be caffeine. It can be nicotine.
But you know what? So far, it doesn't appear to be in the system that has existed, and of course we're on a paradigm shift, that's exciting, hasn't been cost-effective for the system to follow up this knowledge, which is kind of being in a greater and greater size body these days, isn't it?
Well, this is the grant program that I designed. The grant program showed what was the average cost. At that time, it was $59.95 a day to house a prisoner. And it showed what was the likelihood that they would be reincarcerated, that they would fall back into the addictive behaviors that, you know, just literally the downhill spiral. And the program was to actually institute a supplementation protocol where the people, instead of being placed, one of the ways that we wanted to do it was instead of, Indiana is one of two states that has court-ordered anabuse. Court-ordered anabuse is requiring that you take a drug that if you ingest alcohol, it will make you very ill.
Okay,
one of the contraindications when you read the physician's death reference of an abuse is that if you have hepatic problems, if you have problems with the liver, well, most people who have been alcoholics really don't have healthy liver.
Right.
What they're doing in some of these programs, in order to lower the cost of the administration, they're actually dosing them a higher dose to have them come in fewer times per week to take their supervised swallowing of the medication.
Wow. So it's the problem with this is we're out of time, but this whole story is a huge, huge thing at this time on the planet, isn't it? That which we know and that which we can fix up, but there's an awful lot to talk about, the cost effectiveness and when does money and quality of life interact in a positive way.
When you look at the financial feasibility of housing prisoners and removing them as productive members of society,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to giving them high quality nutrition that has historically proven to lower the recidivism rate, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
But the thing you have to do is you have to look at the politicians. The politicians get the pressure from people who don't want to be robbed, who don't want to be hit by a drunk driver. You know, so you have to take, it's where people aren't looking far enough into what is the real cause of the problem. And the real cause of the problem is lack of nutrition, and the cost to us as a society is not just in addictive behaviors. It's also in illness. You see, some formulas.
It's also in hopelessness, but I have to say goodbye, Judy. Will you come back on?
Yes, I'd love to.
And check Judy's website, healingpartnerships.com, and for heaven's sakes, let's all take a look at the nutritional gene therapy chart in Counselor magazine, but you have so many other things to talk about that I hate to let you go, but I'm out of time.
Okay, well have them go in and check out MySpace, myspace.com/JudyLynnCole, JudyLynnCole, and people will be able to see some of the sonic things that are proven to be tied into beta endorphin production.
And that could probably help with addictions, couldn't it?
And that would help you with addictions such as heroin, alcohol, marijuana, sweet starches, chocolate, and tobacco.
Excellent. I'm really glad you put that in there. Thank you, darling. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
So
this is Veronica Entwistle. This is the Paradigm Shifter, our friend Judy Cole, who is really cutting through a bunch of the swath of the illusions of this time, and we have a lot more to talk to her about. We'll bring her on very soon. You can catch me on Jackie Salvitti's show at 8 o'clock on Thursday night. Now, next week on Paradigm Shifters, we've got Justice Bartlett. She's the daughter of Richard Bartlett, who created Matrix Energetics. And we're going to talk to her about working with children and teaching children to do healing energetics for themselves, for all kinds of self-clearing and protective and healing reasons. And she's having a big workshop for children and parents coming up in the Linwood area in Washington next week. And I really, the weekend of the 8th of March. So, it's going to be a very exciting show. And, I'm going to be going to Costa Rica to Amatierra, A-M-A-T-I-E-R-R-A, amatierra.com. You can read about it there, where Jill and Bob Ruttenberg have the most amazing retreat center. We're going to do a 5-day, seminar. It's actually a retreat experience. The food will be great. The places to stay are great. There's a swimming pool. And we'll be doing some very deep exploring of who we are, how to release old stuff, and how to develop a really empowered approach to our authentic selves. We'll work on individual growth, and we'll work in the group. And I want it to be a lot of fun and very peaceful, and it's really an honor to be able to go into your own deep inner space in a beautiful setting. That's going to be March 25th to March 31st. I'm just putting it up on my website, so it's not illuminated there yet. I'm just setting up a syllabus or a plan of action, but you'll get some of it on my website, veronicaantwistle.com, and that will be up for change. I've had a good time talking to Judy Cole. We just got to the edge of some of her tremendous body of knowledge, so we'll talk to her again soon. This is Veronica Entwistle saying future possibilities are just floating around us. I see them like bubbles of effervescence in my futurizing. So remember to focus ahead, even when it comes to addictions or healing situations, and really see, be the power of the observer and really see what it is you're trying to create or wanting to create. Let's all raise our heads high and go for the higher for our sake and for Obama and the administration and for all the planet as we undergo tremendous changes. Much love to all of you. That's the other thing. It's all about love. It's not just about keeping yourself secure and holding back and all of that. It's about learning to love ourselves, be authentic within ourselves, and pass on radiating love one to the other. We are radionics machines ourselves. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying good night. Thank you ever so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. Please tune in next week when we learn all about kids and healing energy. All right. Many blessings.